The program's up front. My name's Brian Edwards Tiekert. We are struggling to connect to our next guest in France. And while we do that, I want to take care of a little bit of house business. The first is that KPFA's biggest event of the year, the Craneway Crafts Fair, is coming up this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Craneway Pavilion on the Richmond waterfront. This is a gorgeous expo by local craftspeople and artisans. It is a great place to do holiday shopping. Warning, you may wind up spending more money than
Call
you intend to.
Today.
And there's full details on our website, kpfa.org, or by Googling Craneway Crafts Fair. The proceeds that you pay at the door, they benefit KPFA. What you pay at the booths, they keep the crafts fair running and benefit the artisans who are exhibiting there. We'll be broadcasting live from the crafts fair. We'll have live music there. There will be food. It is right on the bay. You've got views out the Golden Gate and sunlight streaming in through floor-to-ceiling windows. You can bike there on the Bay Trail. You can drive there. There is huge amounts of parking on site. And we run a free shuttle from the Richmond BART to anybody who's coming on transit. The other is that we still do need donations on our website, www.kpfa.org. Our fun drive finished a little bit short on Friday night, actually short of what we had internally set as the threshold for extending the fun drive. But I guess in a tribute to it is a tribute to our management's faith in us that they decided that extension was not necessary after all. In any case, we would not like that faith to turn into bills we are unable to pay. So if you appreciate the fact that we are trying to restrain the length of our fund drives, and of course, if you appreciate the work we do at KPFA, we could definitely afford to hear from you at www.kpfa.org. Final piece of business. Do we have him? Okay. We're going to take a quick music break and see if we can connect with our guest. We'll be right back. All right.
Hello.
This weekend in France again saw disruptive protest by the Gilets Jaunes, or Yellow Vests, horizontally organized protest movement that has blocked highways, torched cars, and gotten into pitched battles with police, leading to the injuries of hundreds and the deaths of five. Elements of the movement seem to be attacking the government of Emmanuel Macron from both the left and the right. Joining us to sort out what's happening is Tony Cross. He works at the English service of Radio France Internationale, also blogs at theravingreporter.com. Good morning, Tony.
Hello, good morning.
Why don't you start by explaining what these protests are like out in the street?
Well, I've reported on one of them in Paris, the second big one in Paris. There's a lot of tear gas, which is very unpleasant. There's some clashes with the police. And, of course, there's a lot of people who don't get on necessarily onto the TV channels who are the best and not necessarily there to smash the place. The big Paris demonstrations have been partly because the government banned the Yellow Vests from demonstrating down the Champs-Élysées, you know, in the center of Paris, which they wanted to do. That's not been so much in provincial demonstrations. And, of course, all through the last 3 or 4 weeks, we've had people setting up roadblocks and ways of slowing the traffic down at roundabouts near motorways, in front of supermarkets, at strategic points like that as part of the protest.
So tell us the origin story. Like, where did the protest start?
Well, it started on social media, as protests tend to do nowadays. It's a very diffuse movement, has to be said. There are people there who appear to be not very political. There are others who clearly do have political agendas, sometimes on the far right, sometimes more moderate right. There are also quite a number of people now involved who from all around the political spectrum. It's really quite difficult because of its diffuse nature to say who represents the movement, because of course anybody can put on one of these high visibility vests and say I'm a yellow vest and go and protest, or who can speak for it. And so we've had people present themselves as spokespeople, and then we've had other people who've arranged Facebook pages and so on say no, he's got nothing to do with it. He has no right to represent us at all. It's a very diffuse movement, and that's, as one of the people who spoke to me said, both a strength and a weakness.
But specifically, some of those original posts that caught fire were coming from people in a particular polity, a particular département of France, Seine-et-Marne. What's going on in that region?
Seine-et-Marne, well, it's an area in the east of the of France. I don't know if it has anything particularly special, but what we do have here is people either in rural areas and more in small towns or in the on the outskirts of bigger towns. It tends to be a question of people who feel they're paying taxes, and of course the thing that sparked this off, although it's gone way beyond that, has been the rise in the tax on petrol and diesel fuel for people's cars. People who feel that they're being asked to pay more and more tax have very often low wages or are small businessmen struggling to get by and are getting no public services. The public services have been cut back. Small branch lines have been cut back or are going to be privatized, so they will be cut back. The railway system in France is very good, but it's very good for TGV, for the high-speed trains. Every big city wants a high-speed train, but that means that the network outside of the big cities has become neglected and is in decline, and stations are being closed. It's difficult to find a doctor in rural France. The doctors don't want to work there. The facilities are not there to go to health clinics and so on. You have to go to the big town to go to hospital and so on for all of the services of the state. So there's this idea of the French tradition of a state which does provide good social services, but of that being in continuous decline for many decades, really, in these areas, some of whom also, like particularly the east of France, have seen big industrial decline. They used to have jobs, they used to have factories, and many of those factories have been closed down, often because of relocation to cheaper labor countries.
So, like, how would you characterize the movement politically? I know you said it's diffuse, but is it a left movement? Is it a right movement?
Yes, all of those.
what do you mean by all of those? They're not traditional allies.
What you have is all the opposition parties supporting them. None of the opposition parties have started it off, of course. You do have on the demonstrations, it's a fact, very hard right, far right organizations involved. You also have anarchists and left-wing activists. If you look at their demands, now, I would argue that an anti-tax demand is a fairly right-wing demand, and it's certainly true that there are people there who don't want to pay any taxes at all, or very little, but are quite happy to take the services. Of course, nobody's going to come out straight away and say that. And it's been latched onto by these anti-tax parties, which are the right-wing parties. But if you actually look at the lists of demands that have been drawn up, and of course we don't really know how representative these lists of demands are. They, as I say, go way beyond that. There's not a demand for lower taxes as a whole. There's a demand for a progressive income tax. There's a demand for the rich to pay the wealth tax, because a part of the wealth tax was abolished by this government, by Emmanuel Macron's government, one of its first moves supposedly to create jobs. That's very unpopular, including with the yellow vests. There's a demand for the end of the privatization of gas and electricity and so on. In other words, there are a lot of left-wing demands. In fact, Le Monde, one of the most authoritative newspapers, did a comparison. And the highest number of demands which correspond to a presidential candidate's election platform were actually with Jean-Luc Mélenchon, the hard-left candidate. On the other hand, you have demands for tightening up of immigration controls, although a demand for swift treatment for asylum seekers, and you have this idea of a referendum, which actually Mélenchon is for. But I have to say that's this idea for regular referendums of the whole people rather than elected representatives. You have a bit of a general anti-tax mood, it has to be said, which you can certainly place on the right.
We're speaking to Tony Cross. He works for the English service of Radio France Internationale. He blogs at theravingreporter.com. And what we're discussing is the protest movement that has swept France now in its sixth weekend. In French, Gilets Jaunes, that stands for yellow vests. It is because the protesters are wearing the now universally mandated fluorescent pennies that are required to be in every vehicle on the streets of France. They've adopted that as a kind of uniform. And the protests have been so widespread and so disruptive that they have apparently created a serious political crisis in France. Last week, the French president, Emmanuel Macron, gave a national address in response to the protests, had the highest ratings of any event in the history of French television, from what I understand, and made some substantive policy concessions. He promised more support for minimum wage workers, rolled back some of the unpopular tax measures that you just described. How has that speech gone over?
Well, I think the general reception has been it's not enough and it's too late. And I'd have to say also, as you say, there's a rise in the minimum wage. There's the scrapping of an indirect tax, which was imposed on on everybody, but including for pensioners, easing of that situation for pensioners. Some of these demands, which were demands of the yellow vests, and have been conceded, and the government says, oh, it's going to cost us a lot. And after that comes, so we're going to have to cut your services, which certainly isn't one of the yellow vests' demands. But in general, most yellow vest representatives who've been on the media have said, no, it's not enough and it's too late. Of course, the opposition parties say the same. I have to say that another recurring theme when I talked to people on the demonstrations was the arrogance of President Emmanuel Macron. He has a very abrasive style. He's a technocrat. He's supposed to be putting it all right by encouraging private enterprise and by new technology and so on. And every now and then he comes out with statements like, you don't frighten me with your T-shirt, talking to somebody who was criticizing him in a public confrontation. Or, there are people who don't have any ambition in France and remarks like that. And that sort of thing has rankled with many people who feel neglected, who feel trampled on by the system and left behind by the system. So, really, Macron, his style of leadership and his general technocratic attitude is also a target of these demonstrations. And there's certainly a number of the demonstrators who won't be happy until he goes.
Who's his principal rival in French politics at this point? Wasn't it the hard right group, the nationalist group, the Front National, that finished second when he won the presidency?
On the presidency, yes. We have two rounds in the presidential election here in France, and the two top people go in a face-off, a deciding round. And yes, it was Marine Le Pen of what was then the Front National, National Front, now the Rassemblement National, National Rally. Of course, Emmanuel Macron won quite substantially over her, partly because quite a number of people voted for him to keep her out, although there was a very high level of abstentions as a matter of fact. Also because the last television debate before that vote was a disaster for Marine Le Pen. She fell to pieces and put up a very bad performance. The Jean-Luc Mélenchon, the left-wing, the hard-left candidate, also did pretty well, as it happens, but he didn't go into second place. He didn't face off against Macron.
Well, I guess, like, the bigger question is, when does this start to have political consequences? I mean, Macron doesn't have to run for the presidency for another 4 years. You have European Parliament elections in France next year?
That's right, yeah. One shouldn't overestimate the importance of European Parliament elections, given that there's there's always a very low turnout, and there'll be a low turnout again this time. However, now the National Rally, ex-National Front, is ahead in those elections. It looks like they'll do well. It looks like the trend against Macron, which has seen his personal ratings drop quite dramatically, is going to pay off electorally for the far right. Certainly, as far as those elections are concerned, remains to be seen so far as, for example, local council elections and so on, whether that'll also have an effect.
Well, what are the practical consequences if a nationalist-dominated delegation goes from France to the European Parliament?
Well, they're not huge, because, of course, the European Parliament is essentially the commission that decides European policy, which, of course, one of the criticisms of the EU, that it's not got very settled democratic structures. But on the other hand, if you go towards more democratic structures, then it becomes more federalist, which nationalists don't like. But of course, it'd be a big boost for them. They'll be extremely happy about it, and they'll be joining a hard right group which is growing in the European Parliament, which includes, for example, the supporters of Viktor Orban in Hungary, the Polish hard right, the Brexiteers will have gone by then, the British UKIP and so on, they will have left. And of course, the other consequence that it has is that an electoral rise for the far right pulls the whole political debate, or at least the mainstream right, over to the right. And so we're already seeing the mainstream right, Les Républicains, the Republicans, getting harder and harder in terms of their criticisms of immigration. I'm sure that there was an attack in Strasbourg last week, and in terms of saying that there must be a clampdown on law and order against terrorism, aiming Muslims for terrorism, and all this sort of rhetoric. The new leader of the Republicans is on the right of that movement and is certainly going to boost that. And, as I say, an electoral shift towards the far right drags the mainstream right over to their position.
Yeah, more importantly, Macron had seemed to be, before the Yellow Vest movement broke out, kind of positioned to take over the role of Angela Merkel, who's retiring, the German chancellor, in the European Union, which is kind of like the political leader who sets the direction of Europe.
Yeah.
That does not seem as likely now.
Yeah, I think that's off the agenda. He certainly is discredited, I think, on a European scale, although, of course, he's very much in the mindset of European bureaucrats, of the technocrats in Brussels, and of the centrist, center-right politicians of the Merkel's kind. So they will still treat him as an authoritative voice. Maybe they'll be able to revive his standing a little bit.
And the movement itself, I mean, what's your sense? Is it building? Is it fizzling? Is it capable of persisting through the winter?
Looks like it's fizzling. This Saturday's demonstration in Paris was much, much smaller. The government is now talking about sending in the police to clear some of the pickets on the motorway, on the motorways and on the roundabouts and so on. And they're vacating those. Not much in France survives a holiday period. Most protest movements can die off because of them, and of course we're coming up for one. There's a hostage to fortune here. Maybe it'll revive after the after Christmas and the New Year, but I think it's unlikely.
All right, Tony Cross, always appreciate speaking to you. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
Tony Cross works at the English service of Radio France Internationale. He blogs at theravingreporter.com.